Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, well, monthly, tri-weekly, sometimes semi-weekly, relentless and vigorous and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very Well Armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's always my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. Just a free man trying to stay afloat in the sea of communism, and encourage you to be part of the show if you'd like with your calls, questions, ideas, comments, criticism, participation. 563-999-3787. 563-999-3787. I'm trying to remember what the old number, if I can remember it. 646. That's all I remember. 646. Yeah, can't remember. Old number started 646. Anyway. This is the number, 563-999-3787 for the show here. I did put the show broadcast in late tonight, so I'm not expecting a lot of live listenership. But those of you who listen to the podcast, who get the notifications when a new episode is posted, wanted to get something up here. And I've truth be told, I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I've just been struggling. I have a heart arrhythmia that flares up. You can Google it. Like if you Google holiday heart, you'll see it. It's basically people that have otherwise healthy hearts. But sometimes if they, after you drink alcohol, you'll get atrial fibrillation. And so they can do all the heart tests they want and everything will come back normal. But yeah, that's what it is. So That's just, I first happened to be probably 5 years ago, and it was after a day I was on my boat, my old boat on Pewaukee Lake, a super hot day, drank a lot. Oops. Get my silence, my computers and my phone here. All right, there we go. So, one more click down. There we go. So, Okay, Pewaukee Lake, 5 years ago. Super hot day, drank a lot, didn't hydrate, and then went to bed, woke up at, I don't know, 3 in the morning, something, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and I felt my pulse, and my pulse was, like, irregular. And so I woke up my fiance, I said, hey, like, feel my pulse. And then wanted to have her listen to it. So she did, and she's an ER nurse. So she wasn't an ER nurse. She's been, was in the ER for I don't know how many years. But anyway, so she wanted to wanted me to go to the urgent care just to double check. But she said, from listening to my heart, like she stuck her head on my chest, she thought it sounded like atrial fibrillation. And again, she's been in the ER for quite a bit of time, and she knows her stuff. So go to the ER, or excuse me, go to the urgent care. They said, oh no, we can't do a whatever 7-lead, 12-lead, whatever. You got to go to the ER. It was in the same building. So this is in New Berlin at the, I don't know if it was Wheaton Franciscan or the Freighter. I think it was a Freighter Health down by Moreland and Beloit. Anyway, went to the ER, put me on a heart monitor. I think they took blood, but I can't remember for sure. Took an X-ray, make sure my heart wasn't enlarged. Heart wasn't enlarged. Blood work came back normal. Doctor came in, said, what were you doing yesterday? I said, oh, I was on my boat. He goes, what were you doing? I said, drinking all day in the sun. He goes, yeah. So he goes, I'm fairly confident. He goes, you've got what's called holiday heart. It's basically, it happens to people who otherwise healthy hearts. We can do a million tests, nothing wrong. But you'll find that after drinking a little too much alcohol, you'll end up getting this atrial fibrillation. And so, nothing, you know, don't need to take any medication or anything. It just, and he suggested that I stop drinking. And I'm like, well, he goes, how much do you drink? I said, well, I only drink one day a week. I drink a little bit on Friday, and then Saturday afternoons on my boat, I drink a lot. I mean, so he's like, yeah, well, it sounds like alcohol isn't a big part of your life. So if I was you, I would just abstain. And I'm like, okay, dude, I just told you I drink every weekend, every Saturday on my boat. Like, that's my favorite thing to do is chill on my boat on Saturday afternoons, have drinks. So anyway, so I cut back, drank less, made sure that at the first point I didn't even start like hydrating. I drank less and yeah, just drank a little bit less. And so I went 2 years, never had it happen again. And then a little over 2 years later, it happened again. And I hadn't drank an extraordinary amount that day, and kind of struck me, worried me, but I was like, okay, if it happens once every 2 years, you know, no big deal. So then it happened a few months after that. And I was like, okay, first time it happened, I go 2 years without it happening. Second time it happened, go 2 months. Anyway, decided to go to cardiologist. Cardiologist like, yeah, same story, atrial or holiday heart. I could do a million tests, you know, wouldn't find anything wrong with your heart, but you make sure, you know, hydrate. Then he gave me something to take, this heart medication. He's like, if you get an episode, take this. So anyway, since that time, it happens maybe once every 6 months, but then about a month or so ago, six weeks ago, it happened like 1 week, then it didn't happen the next week, then it happened the week after, and then I had one. hadn't even been drinking. I was just at a trade show and had one. So anyway, just got me totally freaked out, worried about what's going on. And just anyway, just very frustrating. And then didn't help a friend of mine from high school who I used to be friends with on Facebook before I was banned. And he was 46. He lived in Kenosha. He was a sheriff's deputy down there. And honestly, I hadn't even talked to him since high school, but we were friends on Facebook. So before I was banned, so I remember seeing things he posted here and there. But then he died, and he was one grade below me, and that just kind of freaked me out. I mean, just anyway, stress, anxiety, just, yeah, it hasn't been a good 3 weeks. So starting to kind of feel a little bit better. Went to the doctor and had a bunch of tests done, and you know, almost everything came back normal except for my liver, which was slightly enlarged. So anyway, it's just decided to take a couple months here and abstain from drinking, which is one of my favorite Saturday afternoon activities. So anyway, we'll see what happens. I'll keep you guys posted, but that's the reason I wasn't doing a show. I just didn't want to come on and be a Debbie Downer, and you know, just didn't feel. And I felt, you know, I mean, most days I actually feel fine physically. It's just this stress and anxiety worrying about my health, which I'm a bit of a hypochondriac. I mean, I've told people that for years. So I worry about things for no reason. I mean, I'll get a bump on my leg and forget how I got it and think I got skin cancer or bone cancer or something. I mean, that's the kind of hypochondriac I am. So not to say that sometimes I haven't, you know, I know my body pretty well and not feeling right and something is wrong. But anyway, apologize for not being on the air more for those who enjoy the show, but that's where I've been. Anyway, so with that said, start the show here with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. Did I already say that? I don't think I did. But so I wanted to talk tonight about, and one of the things that's kept me from doing my show was that I felt like my topics were evergreen, or that means that it's a term I think I heard Rush Limbaugh use one time. It's a topic that he could do any week. It's not time sensitive. It's not current event sensitive. And so this is somewhat evergreen because it relates to the Wisconsin governor's race, which is going to take, I mean, I think the primary is August. Don't quote me on this. I think it's August, maybe August 12th is the primary. And then general election is going to be in November. So, it was made it easier to put off the show for another week because I knew I could do those topics that I had queued up the following week. So, and then some other things popped. Anyway, so I wanted to get on the air as this Wisconsin governor's race started, percolating, and share a couple thoughts since I'm posted the link for tonight's show real late and we don't have any live thoughts, but I'm interested in other people's thoughts. You know, if you, after this segment or the podcast, if you want to shoot me an email, nick@wisconsincarry.org, and that's nick@wisconsincarry.org, and let me know. I'm interested what your thoughts are in the governor's race, who your person is, if you've made up your mind, your impression of the candidates, and of course, I'm going to give you mine too, but don't let mine sway yours. We're all grown adults here and we can make our own decisions. So, but first I wanted to, someone came to the Wisconsin Carry meeting, one of our members, Michael. I don't want to say his last name wrong, and I probably shouldn't just keep it semi-anonymous to say his name's Michael, but he came to the Wisconsin Carry annual meeting. He asked me about, a bit of an unknown candidate for governor. This particular candidate was, his name is Adam Fisher. So Adam Fisher for governor22.com is the guy's website. And so from his website, he says, again, this is Fisher for Wisconsin. I saw a card. He says on the back of his card, pro God, pro gun, pro family, one proud. Let me look at this. Pro-God, pro-gun, pro-family, one pissed-off American. Former police officer, current business owner of 20 years. Adam Fisher for governor2022.com is his website. And again, this is just on a card I saw. So this reminds me of Jonathan Wickman, who was running for governor and now I guess has decided to run for lieutenant governor. And so my comments are going to be the same. You know, this is kind of I don't know if this guy's got the necessary signatures, but on his website, it says, like you, I'm a CCW permit holder, this was our member sent the guy an email and asked him about some various positions that the guy has. But here's what I wanted to share, because I think sometimes people think that there's that the reason that that a good governor just needs to be principled, or a good governor needs to share your views, or a good governor needs to be someone who's, you know, not beholden to special interests and I would say that, and I'll say this first off, like I believe there's qualifications for governor that go far beyond being a good conservative, being a solid conservative, being a staunch conservative. You know, that's not enough. It's not enough to be, you could take the most conservative, hardcore conservative, non-wavering conservative and stick them in the governor's office and they would fail. And that's because it takes more than just principles and even smarts. It takes more than principles and smarts. Wisconsin is a, you know, the state of Wisconsin, you know, we're not a huge state, but the state government is a huge organization. The notion that you could take someone who doesn't know how to run a huge organization and drop them into the chief executive role, it would be like taking someone and dropping them into the chief executive of, I mean, I don't know, name a publicly traded company or a huge company, and thinking that they could do great by that company. They just couldn't. Even if you had great ideas, even if you knew the industry and you had great ideas, it's not enough. And here's why. Donald Trump saw this in his first term as president. Donald Trump scaled up a big organization. And the Trump organization is not a huge organization in terms of number of people. It's a large organization, but it's, I mean, I don't think they have as many employees. You know, they didn't have, the Trump organization doesn't have as many employees as, say, well, Michael's Construction, as GE, as, you know, GE is a huge, huge company. You know, it's a big C Corp. Michael's Corporation, who we'll be talking about, candidate for governor, Tim Michaels, later in the show. I think they have, I don't know if I saw 8,000 employees. I mean, that's a huge organization, but I mean, I'm sure, you know, GE might have 30,000 or 40,000 or something. I mean, the state of Wisconsin is a huge, huge organization. The federal government's a huge, huge, huge organization. If you don't know how to scale, again, it's not even enough being a business owner, not even enough being a successful business owner, not even enough being a genius entrepreneur. If you don't know how to scale, if you don't know how to take something small, because ideas don't mean shit. I've said that for years, and you ever hear someone say, I'm the ideas person, like I'm the ideas guy, run the other way. That means they're lazy as hell. It means they can't execute. Anybody can come up with ideas. I mean, go to bed at night and have a dream. You'll come up with an idea. But a good entrepreneur is someone who can take an idea and execute that idea and make a business out of it. But then once you have a business, the next step and the most difficult step is to scale, because if you're smart and you work hard, you can make a phenomenal small business. And by small business, I don't mean even small. I mean a small business that can even do large revenue. Like, I mean, my company that I own it's an S Corp. We're in seven figures for revenue. I mean, but we're still small. I mean, there's six people total in the organization, some part-time, and then admin help. And then, we do really well. I mean, we do a sizable business, but that's nothing compared to like, to really scale, to scale up. In my business, I still handle all the sales, all the sales that come through the company. I handle them. If you want to scale at some point, I would have to hand that off to someone else. And of course there's entrepreneurs and executives that always kind of stay in their key role, but then I would have to, even sales. I don't think even sales, I think I would still have to have at least sales admin help. I could always stay involved in the sales side of the business, but ultimately I would need more salespeople to really scale the business. And then I need more engineers. I employ licensed PEs, licensed professional engineers, usually structural engineers, architectural engineers. And it's kind of like, kind of like having rental property, right? I own rental property, but I don't own a ton of it because it's difficult to manage it doing it yourself. They're great investments. But if you really want to scale, you got to get something really big, like a large enough apartment building to where you can have a full-time manager. And then you've got scale. Then you don't have to handle all the day-to-day stuff. You've got someone to collect the rents. You've got someone to make sure that the utilities are paid, all this, you know, all that stuff. Make sure that the broken door lock that the tenants have. I mean, so once if you only own a few rental properties, it's easy to do all that yourself. But then to scale, you need someone else to do it. So what I'm getting at is, if you haven't scaled something up, you're not qualified to be governor. You're not qualified to be president. You could run for legislature. Legislature is not an executive position. It's a legislative position. A legislator just needs to be principled. If you want to run for state Senate, if you want to run for assembly, if you want to run for U.S. Senate or U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives, you know, you could do that, and it would just take a principled person. All you got to do is vote, go to committee meetings. I mean, you know, vote on the bills that come before you. I mean, you could introduce your own bills. You could – principle will get you there. You know, you have a staff provided to you. I mean, for the state, I think assembly reps have one staff person in Wisconsin. I think senators might have two, maybe three. I don't know. But you're not running a huge organization. But as governor, you've got to have – I mean, there's all the departments. There's the Department of Health Services, DHS. There's the DOJ, Department of Justice. Now – The Attorney General, he's elected, so you don't appoint that position. But there's the there's WEDA, Wisconsin Housing Economic Development Authority. There's WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development. WEDA is Wisconsin Housing Economic Development Authority. Then there's WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which is how the politicians divvy out millions and millions and millions of dollars to their donors, and their that's how they do political favors. It's a scam. Funny, because Tony Evers said he was going to dissolve WEDC if he got elected governor, and he gets elected governor, and all of a sudden he doesn't want to dissolve EDC because he realizes that's how you pay back your political buddies. That's how you pay back people that that vote for you. Now you just appoint your head. So anyway, all these different the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Revenue, Wisconsin Department of Revenue. I'm thinking of other state agencies, Department of Transportation, Department of Corrections, all these different departments. You know, you have to have people to run those departments to carry out your agenda. And in some of those, you might not have an agenda. For example, you might be really strong with fiscal issues, tax issues. You know, you know your stuff on those, but you don't know how to run prisons. You don't know the prison system inside and out. You don't know why the prison. Maybe you don't know the issues surrounding criminal justice. So then you'd have to have someone that you could put to head up the Department of Corrections that is an expert in that. And you've got to know those people, and you've got to be able to trust those people. And then you've got to be able to trust that those people will carry out your mission. And here's the problem. In Madison, all of those people, Madison and DC, the people that are going to come flocking towards you like moths to a street light at night, they're political creatures. They're looking to advance themselves, and they're looking to do a lot of them are looking to increase their power, their authority, their rank in government. And they have their own interests in mind, not your interest, not carrying out your mission. And that's why, like, Trump's first term, he ended up staffing his administration with political insiders. And what happened? He had leaks. And that's why nothing gets done. And that's why, you know, you see people saying that Republicans and Democrats are all the same. And so then Trump finally in the second half of his first term, I almost said his second term, that's still coming up. In the second half of his first term, he got some good people, got the right people to head up his departments, and finally he started really making progress. So looking at governor, you know, you've got this Adam Fisher for governor. Has he ever scaled up something big? And the answer would be no. I mean, even if he has a very successful small business, if you can't scale, if you can't learn how to put people in positions because you can't grow a business beyond a certain size by yourself, there's just too much to do. You have to have HR people to handle hiring, handle the administrative, handle benefits, all that stuff. Then you have to have other people that take care of your accounting, and you have to be able to trust them that they're not going to embezzle money from you. You have to then have people that head up your various departments, your customer service departments, your sales departments, your finance guys, you know, all these different departments. You have to have people, and you have to be able to lead people. You have to have people, and it's not as easy as you say, or it's not as easy as you might think. You put someone in a certain position, and then you think that, okay, then I just tell them what I want to do. Successful people like to operate with not autonomy, but they like to run their departments. Qualified people like to, and you hired them. You hired someone who's an expert in, or you know, supposedly an expert in finance, an expert in accounting, an expert in customer service. You know, you hired them for their expertise, and then they're not going to turn around and want to be dictated and micromanaged every little thing they do. They'll just quit and go get a different position. So you have to find people that share your vision. You have to have a vision, then find people that share it. And so this is the same in government. If you haven't scaled up a business, how to be able to find people to head up your various departments to run a big operation, how are you going to head up an operation as big as the state of Wisconsin? All those departments, the places that you appoint. I mean, governors even appoint judges. And you think, oh, it's just I'll pick it. No, you got to pick a qualified judge, and you don't know judge. You know, how do you know judges? This Adam Fisher guy gets elected governor. Hey, he doesn't know judges. I mean, he was in law enforcement. Maybe he knows a couple, but he doesn't. Okay, so maybe he knows people in law enforcement, but then he doesn't know people in Department of Natural Resources, perhaps. How do you get someone to head up the DNR that's going to do right by the deer hunters and right by, you know, the game management and right by land use and right, you know, who's going to carry out your mission and not their mission? It's very, very difficult. So that's why these candidates that haven't been a part of something, haven't run something big, haven't run something of scale, I just don't think that they're qualified to be governor. That goes for John Wickman or Wichman or whatever his name is. That goes for Adam Fisher. Now John Wichman turned around, he's going to run for lieutenant governor. But that's my thing. Look, it's not enough to have someone that matches your beliefs. I mean, there's hundreds of people, thousands of people in the state who match your beliefs. And one of them might even decide and get all fantasy land running for governor. And it's not even about people who can raise money and that kind of thing. I'm not even talking about a campaign. That's another discussion. I'm talking about actually being a good governor. Forget the campaign part. Then you got to have people that can build that organization and fundraise and or maybe, you know, if you think you're going to do some kind of grassroots thing, and I mean, you know, power to you, but I'm talking about actually staffing a government and building a government. That takes someone who's, if you haven't taken a company and taken it from a small business, from an idea to a small business to hundreds and hundreds of employees, you just don't know how to scale. I haven't done it. I have a very, very, very successful business. I own real estate investments too. I have an investment company. Black Scorpion Investments is a company that I also own that my investments run through, but I run it all. I don't have, you know, managers that work for me and have staff under them. And I mean, I have employees, but the employees report directly to me. And so I haven't scaled up a large organization of hundreds of employees. I don't have, my business doesn't run itself. I run my businesses. And so that's the difference when you need someone who's proven that they can scale. So you need someone who's got the principles of pro-freedom, free markets, Second Amendment, all that good stuff, and someone who has proven they can scale up a large organization, that they have people that they can go to. Look, if you've scaled up a large organization, you know how to find good people. You know how to lead people. You know how to get people to follow your mission. you know, loyalty is a big part of it. Get the loyal to your mission, not loyal to you as like, oh, you know, like mafia kind of loyalty, mobster kind of loyalty. I'm talking loyalty to your mission. So that's my, that takes me to, you know, these second tier candidates. They don't have that. They haven't proven that they have that scale. And it would be not just a shot in the dark, but look, if you could, if Jonathan Wickman knew, I think I'm getting his name right, Jonathan Wickman, if he knew how to scale something, he would have already done it. Adam Fisher for governor. Look, he's a small business owner. He's a business owner. If he knew how to scale something, he would have done it. You would have heard his name. He would be, you know, the CEO of a large company. And again, you don't even have to be an entrepreneur that took something from zero to huge. But if you headed up a large organization, like, you know, a very large S corp, a very large C corp, you know, then you perhaps have, and you're a very principled person. So that's my opinion on these guys. They it's not enough to be principled. It's not enough to share. And even if they're genuine, even if they're 100% mean it and honest and they would stick to their guns, they would get rolled in Madison. They would get rolled. They would have no idea how to staff departments. If by some miracle they, and they'll never win. That's the other thing, is they're not viable. But if they were, I mean, that's, you know, find out among the, you got to go to the viable candidates and look at the ones of the viable candidates. That is Tim Rantham, who's kind of on the borderline of viable. Tim Rantham, that's unfortunate because he's my first choice. But it, so Tim Rantham, Kevin Nicholson, Rebecca Clefish, and Tim Michaels, those are your viable candidates right now. So you got to go look at those and say, who amongst those is going to do the best job in Madison, do right by freedom and not by go along to get along politician. And so that's what you got to look at. Now, so my opinion there, I was really keen on Tim Rantham. I don't see him putting a campaign together. He's got no advertisements going out there. I thought maybe the MyPillow guy, what's his name? Mike Lindell would be funding his campaign and getting some commercials out there, but he doesn't. Rebecca Clefish has commercials everywhere. Tim Michaels has commercials everywhere. Kevin Nicholson has commercials everywhere. Right now, that's your three viable candidates. And it gets unfortunate because Tim Rantham is my first choice, but he's just not viable. So he's not going to win. He's not going to win the primary. I mean, it'd take a miracle to do it. And even a Trump, the Trump's not going to endorse someone who's a third, you know, second tier candidate. Trump may endorse in this race. He may not. I don't know. But the point just being that take a hard look at those candidates. And here's my breakdown of those candidates. Rebecca Clefish, total establishment. She was part of the Walker administration. Again, she was elected independently, but she then after the, you know, they run on the same ticket then. They're both, it's two separate races, but they run on the same ticket. And then she has the support of Robin Voss. She has the support of all these establishment Republicans. If you paid any kind of attention, you know that Robin Voss is the reason why, I think Robin Voss, with the assist from Scott Fitzgerald, that's the reason why we don't have constitutional carry. That's the reason why we don't have school grounds carry. Those bills were introduced in 2018 when we had a Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican Assembly, and they got stymied. They got stuffed. And in the caucus leadership meeting, Voss, Walker, Fitzgerald, the commentary was, we don't need this right now. It's an election year. We don't need this right now. And so Robin Voss, we all know, I mean, he punished like Andre Jacques when I think Andre Jacques was moving forward a prevailing wage bill, or maybe it was right to work bill. Robin Voss didn't want it because Robin Voss is in bed with the road builders. Robin Voss punished Andre Jacques by pulling usually the most senior person in the committee of the majority party gets the chairmanship of the party, which has a powerful position. And Robin Voss, because he didn't like that Andre Jacques moved forward a legislative bill that Voss didn't like, his committee, you know, his chairmanships, didn't give him chairmanships of committees. And that's because Robin Voss is a tyrant, but then Andre Jacques left the assembly, ran for Senate, and is now in the state Senate. But the fact that Voss is endorsing Clefish is not the kiss of death for me, because there's so many other kisses of death, but it's just proof that Becky is an establishment rhino. She would not be independent. She would not do the kinds of things. And it's Trump showed that if you just buck the political insiders, you can do great, amazing things. Ron DeSantis has shown this. If you buck the political insiders, do right by we the people, which no one, almost no one did. Almost no one did that nationwide. But if you do, you can do amazing things and unleash the power of the free market and the power of people's motivations and ingenuity and reaping the fruits of their labor, and great things will happen in this state. And it's not going to be Becky. I mean, would I say that 100%? No, I'd say 99.9%. Sure, it won't be Becky. So that leaves Tim Michaels and Kevin Nicholson. Here's my thing about Tim Michaels. If you guys haven't heard this, Wisconsin Right Now did an investigative piece on it. The guy has been carrying like dual residences in Wisconsin and in New York and Connecticut for a decade. I was open to Tim Michaels when I heard he was running. When I heard his first commercial, it really appealed to me. He's like, you know, I don't give a rip about special interests. And, you know, when I was in school, we take the pledge and people nowadays take a knee. And, you know, it's just his first commercial I heard sounded good. But then when I found out that this guy's been, you know, essentially carrying dual residences, Wisconsin and Connecticut, and his family lives out in Connecticut. Out in New York and Connecticut, and they participate in all kinds, and they've been out there for a decade. And then he says, this investigative report by Wisconsin Right Now, which is, they have a website, Wisconsin Right Now, or Google it, Wisconsin Right Now. I think it's wisconsinrightnow.com. Great investigative reporters, Jessica McBride and Jim Pivarchek. They do great work. I mean, I subscribe to their updates, and they did this investigation. They found that, yeah, he's so now legally, I think legally, he still lives in, he's a legal Wisconsin resident. He said he's made sure to stay in Wisconsin 183 days out of the year, which if you're more than half your time is wherever you spend the majority, more than half your time. And for him, that's Wisconsin. But his family lives out east. And so he was even on an interview with Dan O'Donnell, and he's like, I'm a Wisconsin resident. I've always been a Wisconsin resident. I pay my taxes in Wisconsin. Well, here's the thing. You've maintained residency in Wisconsin because you want to pay Wisconsin taxes, because you don't want to pay New York taxes. You're a multi-millionaire. You don't want to pay the taxes out in New York. They got a huge income tax, and I think they have city taxes in New York, many New York states, cities. And so, of course, you want to maintain a Wisconsin residence since you can pay Wisconsin tax rates instead of New York tax rates. Duh. I mean, a lot of people move out of New York to Rush Limbaugh moved out of New York to Florida for lower taxes. So that's the reason he maintained it. Well, that may not be the only reason, but it's surely it's no moral victory that he maintained a residence in Wisconsin, that he pays his taxes in Wisconsin. He pays taxes in Wisconsin, is my opinion. And I believe it's probably true because you never know what someone's real motivation is. But he kept his residence in Wisconsin so he could pay Wisconsin taxes on his millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars of income every year. And save himself probably millions of dollars in taxes every year compared to New York. But the culture, his family is immersed in the East Coast culture. They're coasties. They live in New York, and his son's on a sailing crew or yachting or whatever. And yachting is like, I mean, you know, we're not talking big sail yachts here. We're talking little, you know, same kind of regatta races they might have on Pewaukee Lake or Lake Geneva or something like that. But this is not a family who's immersed in Wisconsin. His family doesn't have Wisconsin values. They went to New York high schools. I don't know if anybody, I think some of them are in college now. They're coasties. They're East Coasties. His dad just maintains a residence here. Their dad just maintains a residence here. I mean, they've got $12 million house out in Connecticut or whatever. And that just really left a bad taste in my mouth. I mean, for me, it's truly a disqualifier for Tim Michaels to me. Does it mean he wouldn't be a good Wisconsin governor? No, but it's a strong enough indication that so for me, it's Nicholson. I mean, there's no candidate that's, I mean, I'm going to be voting for Nicholson, Kevin Nicholson, and and hoping and praying that it's him. I used to be lukewarm on Michaels and agnostic. If it was Michaels, okay, so be it. But now, I mean, I guess I would take Tim Michaels over Rebecca Clefish. Here's the other thing, though, that really starts to annoy me. Now, as I watch more of Tim Michaels' commercials, I just think the guy comes off so phony. If for those who aren't living in state, because I know we've got some listeners from out of state, Tim Michaels' commercials here in Wisconsin, they show him driving around and the Tim Michaels, sometimes he's standing in front of a piece of Michaels' equipment, the construction company equipment, the big red, all their equipment's painted red with the Michaels name, just says Michaels on the side. You know, they do pipelines and all kinds of different, large scale contracts. I think they do some road building. They've got Michael's company has a big, it's called, it's going to come to me, but they've got a big yard right by Skipper Bud's Marina downtown Milwaukee, where they've got all these trucks going in and out, Grand Trunk Yards is called. And they've got massive boulders and they've got barges and they're putting boulders on barges and moving stuff around, trucks in and out all day long, kicking up a shit ton of dust that comes and settles all over my yacht that I got to vacuum off every damn week. But yeah, I mean, that's what. So his commercials, he's standing in front of some of his company's equipment. He hasn't shaved. He's got the 5 o'clock shadow or worse going. No sport coat, no suit, just a shirt and a not a flannel, but a button down shirt with a t-shirt under it, buttoned down. He's trying to look, dude, you live in New York in Connecticut. Supposedly you moved out there to shepherd a big project that your company had been awarded in New York. I don't know if it was some tunnel construction or something, but don't bullshit us. Don't be phony. You don't walk around with 3 days of facial hair growth, unkempt hair, and again, not a flannel shirt, but a casual button-down shirt over a t-shirt driving a pickup truck. That ain't you, Tim. Let's be real here. That ain't you. Show them you and your private jet and your, suits and whatever. I mean, just be real. Look, Trump wasn't phony. You can be a mega millionaire and still be relatable to people. Trump didn't hide it. Trump flew on his, he called it Trump Force One. Trump flew on his helicopters and his private planes and showed up on stage with his typical blue suit and red tie and his red MAGA hat on. But he wasn't a phony. He didn't go out there. Trump didn't go out and put on overalls and, he didn't put on a hard hat and try to make himself into something he wasn't. And that's what I feel like Tim Michaels is doing. I feel like based on Tim Michaels' commercials, again, those who don't live in state, he's hasn't shaved in days in these commercials. He's real folksy talking to you. One of them, he's driving to pick up with his, hand at 12 o'clock high. And the camera view is from like the passenger seat, the shotgun angle. And he's like, I don't give a rip about special interests and I don't care about their money. And, and with his scraggly, again, looks like he hasn't shaved in 4 days. It's phony. I would like him more if he got off his private jet and said, I'm a wealthy guy and not necessarily say I'm a wealthy guy like Trump, but I'm a wealthy guy and that enables me to do whatever I want because I don't need more money. I don't need more of anything. I could spend the rest of my life flying around on my private jet and hanging out with my family, but I want to see Wisconsin a free state again, like Florida. I mean, that would be genuine. But this is what bugs me about politicians that throw on it. Like, if Trump went to a gun range, he would go to the gun range with his suit and his tie, and if anything, he'd throw a MAGA hat on. But he wouldn't be out there being a poser. And that's what Tim Michaels looks like to me, just a poser. He makes it seem like he's the foreman on one of his jobs here in Wisconsin on one of the construction sites. Bullshit. Maybe it'll work. Maybe people will fall for it. But I don't think so. It's a Republican primary. I think, especially here in Southeast Wisconsin, a lot of people listen to talk radio and they've heard. It just, their family is, they're coasties. They like the New York Connecticut East Coast culture. And that's way different than the Wisconsin culture. You know, and he even said on an interview with Dan O'Donnell, yeah, I guess I could have moved my family back sooner. Well, yeah, well, why didn't you? Because you like it out there. You maintained a Wisconsin residence so that you could pay Wisconsin taxes, not New York taxes, but your family you kept out there. And I guess, well, supposedly first his family went out there because his daughter had a brain cancer or something, or some rare cancer, and there's a better hospital out there. But then his family liked it enough to stay out there, finish school, go to college, and that's where they live. They didn't move them back to Wisconsin. They clearly like the East Coast culture. That's not a Wisconsin culture. In fact, that's very anti-Wisconsin's culture. Very different value system out there. So for that reason, again, Tim Michaels, just disqualifier for me. I guess I'd still take him over Becky Cleafish, but yeah, that's, you know, that's my opinion on that. Family's totally engaged in the coasty lifestyle. It's an entirely different culture. It's an entirely different value system. And it's just a mega turnoff for me. And like I said, Trump proved, you know, a New York guy can do right by America. But I think that's an exception, not a rule. And I guess it puts Michaels above Cleafishy, but behind Nicholson. And again, Rantham would be my first choice, but I just don't think he's viable. But that's the big difference is Trump was a New Yorker who did right by America, but he didn't go out and try to be phony. And Tim Michaels is already being phony, in my opinion, with his commercials. And that's an indication that he's not genuine. And it's an indication that he can't be trusted. And again, I could be wrong, but it just, all that stuff rubs me the wrong way. So anyway, got a couple, we got 6 minutes left in the show here. So I'm going to go here. So this whole abortion thing, first off, wow, I mean, we're just living in a bizarre world where you've got now the left has no shame, no morals, no values, no inhibitions. The left will do whatever they want, whenever they want to serve their purpose and achieve their ends. You know, so some lefty leaks the fact that Roe v. Wade is going to get struck down. Look, Roe v. Wade should be struck down. It was a terrible decision. The amazing Justice Antonin Scalia, he even said that the Constitution is mute on abortion. There is nothing in the Constitution about abortion. It's just not there. For that reason, abortion belongs at the state level. It's amazing the ignorance of people that think that Roe v. Wade getting overturned is banning abortion. It's not. It's putting it back to the state level, and it's the right thing. It's the place where it should be. Now, with that said, as this comes back to the states now, and now the state's going to fight about it, I'll tell you what my position would be, is that I think, look, right or wrong, too many people think that the job of law is to be right or wrong, and it's not. Look, it's wrong to lie. It's wrong to lie to your husband. It's wrong to lie, to lie to your wife, vice versa, you know, whoever. It's wrong for a husband to lie to a wife. It's wrong for a wife to lie to a husband. It's wrong to cheat, which in some states is illegal, but I don't think it's ever enforced. But, you know, adultery is wrong. There's all kinds of things that are wrong, but they shouldn't be illegal. Does anybody want it to be illegal to lie to your spouse? It's wrong. And that's what where I come down on this abortion thing. Right or wrong, you'll get the anti-abortion folks. Look, the job of government is to decide what should be legal and illegal. I personally think that abortion late term is wrong. I certainly think that abortion, you know, of an 8-month-old baby, an 8-month term baby, an 8-month term, I don't want to call it a fetus, a baby that's a month from being born, certainly murder. If you ask me, I still maintain the viability of the fetus argument, which I agree. Science is moving shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. You know, viability of the fetus 20 years ago is not what viability of the fetus is today. Now, don't quote me on this because I don't know how, I don't even know how many weeks on stuff, but something that used to be, you know, not a survivable premature birth is now a survivable premature birth, not just survivable, but thrivable. And so, yes, I think that I subscribe to that whole viability of the fetus thing. If it's viable outside, if it's viable independent of the mother, then it is its own life. And that should be illegal. If it's not viable without the mother, then it's not a legal person yet because it's requires the mother. And here's my, and people, the pro, so if I was governor of Wisconsin, I would support a law that said whatever point viability is, and again, that might change in 10 years, it might be different, but right now, whatever point viability is, if that's 18 weeks or 24 weeks or 30 weeks or whatever it is, that's where I would say it's illegal after that point. And before that, legal. Doesn't mean it's right. That's between you and your God. That's above my pay grade. Do I think it's wrong? Probably, you know, but there's a lot of things that are wrong. There's a lot of things that are sins. I mean, I was raised Seventh-day Adventist and drinking alcohol is a sin. That's what some Adventists believe. So I'm not here to impose morality using government. It can still be wrong. You can still criticize. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. Just because abortion at 10 weeks is legal doesn't mean it's right. You can still have the opinion abortion at 10 weeks is wrong, immoral, whatever. But we're talking about legal versus legal. What should people go to jail for? And I continue to believe that I continue to be like that viability for legal and illegal. And it may still be murder. You know, if God comes down, he might say, you know what, Nick? But I don't think God is asking us, look, everybody has to make their own choices in life if you believe in God. I don't think, let's say if you were convinced that drinking was wrong, prohibition didn't work. So again, something that's wrong, but shouldn't be illegal, in my opinion. So that's where I fall on abortion. It's wrong. And here's the thing. There's precedent for this. Does anybody think a five-year-old should be able to go out and buy a gun? I don't. So there's precedent for minors not having the same rights, not having the same rights as adults. You don't get to sign a contract till you're 18. You can't. Unless you get emancipated, your parents dictate your rights. Your parents make your decisions for you until you're 18, legally. Therefore, a woman, her right to choose what happens in her body trumps. I agree that babies have rights. I agree that that fetuses have rights. But from a legal standpoint, I'm of the conclusion that if a baby is not viable outside of the fetus, it's dependent upon the mother. And because it's dependent on the mother for life, that mother's rights to make the decisions trump the rights that a fetus does have. Because I agree that a fetus has rights. I agree that a 10-year-old has rights. A 10-year-old does not have the right to keep and bear arms. And we might argue about that age. I mean, I might say 16, look, drive a car, right to keep and bear arms. But nobody thinks that a 4-year-old should be able to go out and purchase a gun or carry a gun. And yeah, rights are given by God, but the right to keep and bear arms should not be, we have things called minors. Now you're taking something that is not even a minor, it's not even born, but not even viable without the mother's dependency on the mother for life. That's why I draw that line of legal versus illegal. And there's people that I'm friends with that are going to disagree with me and think it's immoral. But here's the thing, I'm not disagreeing with them that it's immoral. Perhaps it is. Again, above my pay grade. God will decide. God will judge. But legal versus illegal, and people say, well, murder is illegal. Again, I don't think that's a clear-cut definition. And that's why, for me, the legal standard of legal, and that could change. You know, if liability goes to younger and younger, then I think that the law, it would make sense to adjust the law to younger and younger. If I was king of the world, if I was governor of the state of Wisconsin, that's the law that I would want. I want a law that says, and whatever that point is, if it's 24 weeks or 20 weeks, I'm even okay with, again, legal versus illegal. Even if it was, like, let's say a fetus is viable at, I'm making up stuff because I don't know, 24 weeks. I would even be okay saying 20 weeks. I would even be okay erring on the side of earlier. So yeah, if you want to get an abortion, you better make up your damn mind before 24 weeks or before 20 weeks or before 16 weeks or whatever. Again, maybe 20 weeks is viable. I don't know. I didn't even Google it for the show, but whatever that is, I'm okay even going before that. I think some states have like the fetal heartbeat bill. I don't know if I support that. I'd have to look at those closer. I don't even know what point the fetal heartbeat is. I mean, if that's, because from a legal versus illegal standpoint, I do think it's a woman's choice up to a certain point. We can argue about that point. Some people say it should be a legal period. No point, you know, if it's 1 week old, should be illegal to abort it. Again, I don't share that view. If I was drawing illegal and legal, I would have a window of opportunity for a woman to have, not because it's morally right, because all my friends who are viciously pro-choice, excuse me, viciously pro-life, I will, what do they call that? I will not dispute that it may be immoral or is immoral. I'll, what do they call that in court when you, submit, there's a term for it. Anyway, not acknowledge, not submit, will, it's on the tip of my tongue, will, it'll come to me. Anyway, when you acknowledge that a piece of, when someone, the other attorney is trying to argue a piece of evidence, and you'll just turn around and acknowledge that, yeah, we agree that that's the, you know, that is the gun that was used to kill. Stipulate. That's a good stipulate. I will stipulate to the fact that all abortion probably immoral. I'll stipulate to that. Not 100% sure, but I'll stipulate to the fact because it's above my pay grade, but I'll stipulate to that. But we're not talking about moral laws are never about, I mean, partially they are. Morality is a part of laws, but legal versus illegal is different because, again, does anybody want it to be illegal to lie? No. Well, some people, maybe they do, but that would be, then we really would all be in jail. Because then you'd have to define, well, what kind of a lie? I mean, is an exaggeration. Someone says, yeah, I make $50,000 a year and they make 20. Is that a lie? Sure. Okay, but that lie is okay. But if you lie to your wife, did you sleep with someone else? No, I didn't, and you did. That kind of lie. Again, I don't think anybody really wants to make lying illegal. But lying is immoral. So some things, morality and laws pair up, but in other cases they don't. And, you know, that's my position, and I'm sticking to it. And I'm happy to entertain anybody who wants to tell me that I'm going out. And look, you can't, because that's the wonderful part about my position is if you say, abortion is murder, and I'll say, okay, but it's not illegal. I don't think it should be illegal. And they say it's wrong. Okay, I'll stipulate it's probably wrong. I mean, I think if God came out of the sky right now and answered, he'd probably say, yeah, abortions at any point is wrong. Okay. It's probably what God would say. But he also said that thou shalt not lie, and we don't want to throw people in jail for lying. I think we can all agree we don't want to throw people in jail for lying. So that's where my position comes, that abortion at some stage is not a criminal offense. And if you say it's immoral, I'll stipulate that it is. Anyway, so that's what I got for the show tonight. Good to be back on air with you guys. Hopefully I didn't go too long without a show to where my loyal audience listeners, my podcast listeners, don't check in and catch the show. And if you do, feel free to shoot me a email, which I do get. I do read. I read them all. In fact, Tom from Madison. He corrected me. I can't say Tom from Madison anymore. Tom moved out of Madison, but he sent me an email, and I did get it. And I read it, and I don't think I replied, Tom, but I read it, and it was probably among one of those days. Oh, here it is. I still got it right here. I'll share this. Tom had said in an email to me that he didn't like that I used the term ghost guns, and that they are simply simple homemade firearms. I agree. I mean, I do think words do matter. And I hate when we use the term. So yeah, ghost guns, I have to reference it because I'm referencing what the topic is. But then again, I guess would use them both together. Like when someone say there is no like gun show loophole, there is no gun show loophole. There's a private party sale exception. So I don't use the term gun show loophole. I use the term private party sale exception, but I do reference the gun show loophole. Then when I say there is no gun show loophole, if I was to talk about ghost guns, I should say, you know, supposed ghost guns, which are actually just simple homemade firearms. That's how I would phrase it. Cause I can't, you know, you can't ban or you can't exercise the word from your vocabulary, but I think it should always be, just like the repeating the don't say gay, the Democrats' so-called don't say gay bill. No. If you're going to say that, the bill that Democrats call don't say gay, which is actually the parental rights bill, you know, you always should temper it, but you still sometimes have to use the word. Anyway, reading here. I just want to let you know, I did get your message and I do read them all. And, there's some of the other things are other things that Tom and I chat about. So, do shoot me an email, nik@wisconsincarry.org. If you had any comments, if you have a different, and I'm interested, I would say that I'm still open to something different on the abortion topic. I'm still open to someone that wants to disagree with me, but that's the standard that I've always lived by. Look, we don't, you don't get all your rights until you're 18. You don't get some rights until you're 21. So there's a precedent that, you know, not all people have equal rights when you're a minor. And again, now we're here, we're talking. So my logic that, you know, I'm a man of logic. And that's my logic. So if you want to disagree with me, do it with logic. Do it with a justified legal basis, a justified statutory context and basis. Don't just say, well, it's wrong. Okay. Back that up, because we need to put this in the context of law. So anyway, thanks for tuning in for my very lately. I think I scheduled the show. I was actually, I put the show to go on at 9:30. I was literally scheduling a show at like 9:28. And then by the time I hit submit, it was already past 9:30. But wanted to get the show in, and now I got to do a few more chores tonight and get on with my week. So next week, don't know. Maybe we'll do a show. Maybe we won't do a show. Hard to say. If we do a show, it'll almost certainly be an 8:30 or 9 o'clock start, because this time of year I'm almost always golfing on Fridays. So thank you guys for tuning in on the podcast, listeners. It's great to be with you again, and hopefully my health anxiety, again, because I felt pretty good, but my health anxiety will start to wane, and I can start to feel a little bit more normal and enthusiastic again. So you guys have a great week. Carry on and be well armed. Yeah.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.